Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com, and also sometimes known as whiteresistanceradio.com. Well, of course, you have to have been completely sealed up in a cave without radio or internet or anything else not to know about the world pandemic called the coronavirus. Which appears actually to have, did start in China. I know there's a lot of controversy. Some people believe the CIA created this virus. I spoke to somebody who's has been a member of the Chinese Communist Party, and this person firmly believes the CIA has spread this virus to China to try to reduce its gross domestic product. And because China is moving ahead. I have a lot of trouble with that idea. First of all, that would presume that the CIA is actually on our side. Secondly, as anybody with any knowledge of the chemical weapons from the First World War, but primarily mustard gas, knows, these weapons are extremely volatile. And the wind was blowing toward the enemy trenches during the First World War. Sometimes mustard gas was released, and the idea was it would hit the enemy troops and seriously incapacitate or kill them. However, the wind had a funny, quirky behavior, suddenly changing direction, sometimes blowing back right on the Allied lines. Coronavirus is, it's not being widely reported, but it is racially targeted. It seems the most vulnerable are indeed the South Chinese and the Japanese, followed by the North Chinese and the Koreans, followed by Vietnamese and somewhat farther down the line, East Asians, Indians, Pakistanis, perhaps Iranians, much farther down the line, Africans, and somewhere farther below them, Europeans. Okay, that you may say, well, that might suggest it was used by the CIA. Well, the problem is, although it might be more lethal for Chinese, it still is lethal for others. So I've had a great deal of trouble believing that. I'll come back to this on another show, but to make a long story short, it would appear that this virus and may well have originated in Saudi Arabia. I won't explain how, but samples of it were obtained by a top-secret Canadian lab in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and by a similar lab at Johns Hopkins Medical Center in Baltimore. A Chinese doctor was summarily deported from Canada back in June. She had worked at this top secret laboratory in Winnipeg, Manitoba for some months. It would seem that she may well have stolen samples of this. She actually worked for a top secret virus research center in, you got it, Wuhan, China. It is in Wuhan that the virus appeared to have first hit. Now, would it make much sense that the Chinese would be trying to seriously damage their own people? That's not just the people who die, but it's the huge disruption to the economy. Again, I'd say probably not. Did the virus escape? That's probably the case. Anyway, all sorts of stories about the reaction. I had read as far back as about 10 days ago, that in some areas of Toronto, particularly where there were a lot of Chinese, there was panic buying at the grocery store. People were buying, you couldn't buy toilet paper. It was all being purchased. And various other supplies were flying off the shelves. Now, I had checked this out, and of course, these types of things are anecdotal. That doesn't mean I did a scientific study. But it does mean that I had checked it out, and I found a number of places where including my own local market, where there was no problem getting toilet paper, if that's what one wanted, or other supplies, except this was in short supply, and that was hand sanitizer. Now, why people would be hoarding toilet paper is a bit of a mystery. This is not a gastrointestinal flu. So you may get sick, but it's not a case of explosive nonstop diarrhea. So why would people be stocking up on toilet paper? Well, I'm sure it's always a good idea to have a few rolls ahead. But now I'm out in the interior of British Columbia. On the ranch where I'm staying, I decided I'd buy some food for the table. I thought I'd buy some, among some other things, potatoes. Well, the local Overweighty, that's a chain of grocery stores in British Columbia, had no potatoes. You got it. At about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, no potatoes, not of any sort. Gold, white, yellow, red, baking potatoes, none. Not a spud to be found. And many other vegetables were also gone. In walking around the store, I found some shelves completely bare. I mean to say the whole store was bare, but many shelves were bare. Hardly any eggs left. No butter. What's happening? So I asked fellows in the vegetable department, where are the potatoes, or do you have any more potatoes? He said, no, we sold them all. He said, people are panicking. People are crazy. He says, they're just, it's like, you've heard of power shopping. Well, this is power shopping on steroids. So I was in another grocery store today, Sunday, in a smaller village, and sure enough, they had potatoes. There were some shelves, some products were obviously had been stripped bare. They had a sign in there limiting you to 2 packages of toilet paper per customer. Presumably, they did have toilet paper. So I asked an employee there, too, what was happening. He said, people are panicking. People are buying anything they can put their hands on. Sometimes intelligently, sometimes not. I reckoned, if as a provider for the family, the wife or the husband, you think, well, we'll use, well, let's say arbitrarily, say 20 potatoes for the end, till the end, in a month. Then, it may make some sense to stock up just in case. You are quarantined, and that may not be a major risk, but okay, that might be prudent, and potatoes will keep. So similarly, vegetables like carrots, turnips, other things are not going to keep. Canned goods, they'll keep for a year or more. So it might indeed be prudent to have a little bit of a supply in, but this sort of panic is quite frankly scary. At that particular grocery store, I was told that the last couple of days had sold as much as they did on each of the several days before Christmas. In other words, the peak time of the year when people are buying for the big Christmas festivities, perhaps Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Christmas dinner, and so on, this was the equivalent. I pass this out only as a fact. Now, something that's worrying a lot of people is, I know there are people who think that this is a hoax. I'm open to persuasion, but I tend to believe it is not a hoax. For one thing, huge corporations are severely restricting their operations, and that means mega bucks. The National Basketball Association, or NBA, has canceled the season. The National Hockey League has suspended play for at least a month. This is mega bucks for them. They need these games and then the television revenues and so on. This is their bread and butter. And similarly, places like Disneyland, big amusement parks, are shutting down. That's their bread and butter. So I feel some skepticism about the notion that this is a hoax. Now, having said that, we've got to be very cautious about how this might be used by the enemies of our people. Or the enemies of freedom. Something happened on 9/11. No intelligent person, in my opinion, would deny that. Twin Towers were hit and destroyed. Over 3,000 Americans died. The Pentagon was attacked by something. Some people say it was one of the crashing hijacked planes. Others believe it was actually a cruise missile. But anyway, something happened. And there was serious concern, and a strong desire for government to, quote, do something. Well, government did. And they brought in many restrictions that I believe went overboard. For instance, it got more and more difficult to be a passenger on an airline. The so-called security, and I put that in quotation marks, checks, are in many cases incredibly intrusive and got people accustomed to restrictions on their freedom. Why? For security. Okay, I'm in favor of security. But a lot of sleazy and manipulative things are done in the name of security. For instance, why should carrying a bottle of water, a plastic bottle of water, onto the plane be not allowed? Well, actually, it is allowed if you buy it on the other side of security. But if you bring a bottle of water with you, going through security, it's taken away from you. Why? Well, because it could contain acid. Really? What does acid do to a plastic container? I mean, if it's really serious acid, like hydrochloric or hydrofluoric acid, well, it'd eat right through it. But people put up with this. And I think a lot of what is done, and this is actually probably a topic for another program, goes overboard. But it's a good way of making people docile. And if you pipe up, it's for your own good. It's security. And if you continue to pipe up, and I've had this actually, I've actually been threatened. We don't have to let you on this plane, says some third world security person. I say, here's my boarding pass. Yes, you do. Oh, no, we don't. We can call the police. And what were they threatening to call the police for? Because I had questioned whether it made much sense to take what was probably a couple hundred dollars worth of cosmetics, perfume, deodorant, and so on, from a teenage woman, or maybe early 20s woman's backpack, for security. And these went in the garbage bag. And I thought, I wonder if at the end of the night, what's in that garbage bag actually goes into the trash, or some of that stuff gets taken to people's homes. Well, anyway, for my impertinence, I was threatened. They threatened, first of all, they called the police, and I'm not be allowed to fly. Anyway, it got settled, we've got to be, this is something I urge people to be careful of. The problem with panic is people are prepared to often give up freedoms. You know, if daddy promises to keep you safe, you don't care how daddy does it. This is a real worry about these crises. There's voices up on the internet suggesting that we might be facing some form of martial law. I think before we accept that, we have to be very, very cautious that this is not a power grab by the elite. So here's some psycho writing. It's actually the author of this is a commentary, but the person he's quoting, I'm going to quote this guy at some length. This is an excellent opinion call by Rex Murphy in the Saturday National Post. This is a quotation from a guy named Conway. Ed Conway. Don't take this the wrong way, but if you were a young hardline environmentalist looking for the ultimate weapon against climate change, you could hardly design anything better than the coronavirus. And Rex Murphy, the person who the commentator adds, I had already guessed that someone somewhere would somehow link global warming with this pandemic, but I never thought it would take such a grim turn. You know, there are some people who are prepared to link global warming or climate change to anything. And this goes on, quoting this fellow Conway. Unlike most other such diseases, it kills mostly the old, who, let's face it, are more likely to be climate skeptics. It spares the young. Most of all, it stymies the forces that have been generating greenhouse gases for decades. Deadly enough to terrify, containable enough that aggressive quarantine measures can prevent it from spreading. The rational response for any country determined to prevent loss of life is to follow China's lead and lock down their economy to stem its spread. So stop transportation, lock down the economy, that will stop the spread of coronavirus. And that's a good thing, because the less carbon dioxide that's generated, the better. And besides, if the coronavirus hits primarily older people, or it's fatal with older people, or more likely to be, then that's a good thing, because they tend to be more the climate skeptics. Those who perhaps are not quite prepared to accept returning us to some sort of pre-industrial state to save the planet. Conway is based on the definitions I've already cited, says Rex Murphy, a fanatic. He's possessed by an excessive and mistaken idea, one he subordinates to everything else, even a global pandemic. He sees the good side of all this. It will kill old people, but that's a benefit, because most of them, not all, mind you, are climate skeptics. It's deadly enough to terrify. Terrifying people are attempting to do so is what global warming fanatics have chosen as their primary tactic. And you could think of grim little Greta Thunberg. How dare you? You ruined my future. Well, maybe staying out of school, Greta, is kind of ruining your future, but the idea that the terror they instill will force countries to shut down the entire 21st century economy. So Conway, you might want to, well, who is this guy Conway? Conway is a Sky News editor, and he can look at this pandemic, which is poised to kill many, disrupt entire nations and frighten the masses, and find in it not an occasion to weep and sympathize, but to gloat about the right people being killed. And he does so because it might serve his fanatical cause, the extinction of the modern economy and the end of all carbon emissions. Some people are so right, they should be locked up. Good point by Rex Murphy. Here's another disturbing report, kind of in the same vein. Not gloating about deaths, but and this is a report out of Italy. And I want to thank my former compatriot at the Ethnostate radio show, which we hope will be revived. For this is Ken Givadan, and Ken puts this out. You might want to check him out, dailyken.com. I'll spell that out for you. It's daily as in daily, Ken, KENN.com. Octogenarians can expect no medical care in Italy if they contract a coronavirus. That means people over 80. A document prepared by the nation's crisis management has placed those aged 80 and older at the end of the line in what's called triage. And triage is a battlefield term, meaning that if the medical care is limited, the doctors categorize patients in the following way. Roughly, those who are going to die anyway, you leave them alone, you let them die. I mean, you might, if you have the time, give them a sedative or a painkiller, but you don't treat them, they're going to die. Those who are lightly wounded and will recover anyway, they're second from the bottom in priority, because perhaps that they will recover. And then the ones you put the biggest emphasis are on the ones who are injured, but with treatment will recover. Now, it may seem brutal, but that's sometimes what has to be done on the battlefield. Well, now, what's coming here? I'll come back to that. Octogenarians can expect no medical care in Italy if they could contract the coronavirus. A document prepared by the nation's crisis management has placed those aged 80 and older at the end of the line. Folks will not be denied access to intensive care if they are in poor health, and should pressure on beds increase, according to The Telegraph, which is a fairly reputable British newspaper. Because the perfect storm with this coronavirus is old people are particularly susceptible, and if they're in bad health already, weak from one illness or another, they are more likely to die. So this strategy would seem to be that they will not get any additional care. It's presumed that younger aliens will be given precedence over older Italian citizens, many of whom have worked and paid taxes their entire adult lives. Now think about that. Younger aliens, don't forget, Italy's been on the front line of the Third World Invasion. A young illegal who has never made any contribution to Italy may be given precedence over an 82-year-old Italian who has worked all his life, contributed to his country, and paid taxes. To place this in perspective, the following persons, very famous people, are currently in their 80s. Mikhail Gorbachev, 89. Sophia Loren, the great actress, 85. Clint Eastwood, the actor and director, 89. Willie Mays, the baseball player, 88. Jack Nicklaus, the golf player, 80. Yoko Ono, the sometime artist and sometime bedmate of John Lennon, 87, the great beauty and animal rights activist Brigitte Bardot, 85, Pope Francis, 83, Sean Connery, the actor, 89, Hank Aaron, the baseball player, 86, and Jane Fonda, sometimes called Hanoi Jane, 82. The document, and this is an Italian government document, the document says, the growth of the current epidemic makes it likely that a point of imbalance between the clinical needs of patients with the with coronavirus and the effective ability of intensive resources will be reached. In other words, there will be a point where the resources will not be able to deal with the demand. Quote, and this is a direct quote, should it become impossible to provide all patients with intensive care services, it will be necessary to apply criteria for access to intensive treatment, which depends on the limited resources available. The criteria, it says, set out guidelines. If the situation becomes of such an exceptional nature as to make the therapeutic choices of the individual case dependent on the availability of resources, forcing hospitals to focus on those cases in which the cost-benefit ratio is more favorable for clinical treatment. In other words, if it's deemed that there's a reasonable likelihood that that intensive treatment will not, even with intensive treatment, the old person may die, the person over 80, then the intensive treatment should be used on the people younger. Luigi Icardi, a counselor for health in Piedmont, that's the area of Italy, in the north, in Lombardy, that's very much seems to be the epicenter, said, I never wanted to see such a moment. The document will be binding and will establish, in the event of saturation of the wards, a precedence code for access to intensive care, based on certain parameters such as potential survival. The document is already complete, and only approval from a technical scientific committee is needed before it is sent to the hospitals. The criteria are expected to apply throughout Italy, government sources said. More than 1,000 people in Italy have died from the virus, and the number is growing every day. More than 15,000 are affected. Italy has 5,090 intensive care beds, which for the moment exceeds the number of patients who need them. Takeaway from this this stuff is serious. Latest news from my good friend and free speecher battler, Dr. James Sears. And we began to suspect this late last week. There's word was out that there might be some of Ontario courts were suspending hearings. And Dr. Sears tweets this out, sends this out. Please let everyone know that due to the coronavirus shutdown, we have to postpone the appeal date, most likely for 10 weeks. It's actually a blessing in disguise because it gives me, this is Dr. Sears, a chance to do a thorough job studying the case law in the Crown's response. So, to live to fight another day, always a good strategy. So I'll be putting this out on the cafe. Now, if you want to follow free speech issues in Canada, please go to Canadian Cafe, just like coffee. And our website is www.cafe.nfshost.com. Cafe.nfshost.com, and we give you regular updates on free speech issues. Oh, yeah, still back to the coronavirus. Original whistleblower Dr. Li Wenliang. Picture of this poor guy in hospital, he died. Dr. Li Wenliang, the whistleblower ophthalmologist at Wuhan Central Hospital, became one of the first faces of the spiraling coronavirus crisis. The 34-year-old father tried to warn fellow doctors about the mysterious outbreak in December. You know, it's not that long ago. Security forces went to his house after he sent a public health warning about it and accused him of making false comments. Remember, Canada used to have a false news law that was applied to, yeah, that's right, discussions of World War II. Aaron Sundel had put out a booklet called Did 6 Million Really Die? With the conclusion that that figure was a vast exaggeration. Well, he was charged under a Canadian law since ruled unconstitutional that forbade the publication of false news. Well, so Red China had the same thing. He was reprimanded. Within a week, he was infected. Hospitalized with the illness he fought on and went public with details on how he'd been silenced. He quickly became a hero. It was reported on February 7th that he died in the hospital. Chinese, so he is a very, very good example of why censorship is so bad. And it's bad not just because it restricts your rights or my right, but it's bad because by restricting our right to speak, especially about controversial things, those restrictions keep valuable information from society. The Red Chinese authorities, as of early December, had not decided how they were going to deal with this rampaging virus, which had escaped from the animal kingdom, crossed into the human kingdom, probably through the consumption of wildlife, bats, snakes, kept in filthy conditions where, you know, they're urinating, defecating, spreading bodily fluids over each other because they're in cramped cages. And the Red Chinese authorities sat on this information, tried to deny it, tried to cover it up. And one of the first people to publicly blow the whistle and say, there's a problem here. He wasn't criticizing the government, he was just saying, there's a problem. Was this poor guy, this poor doctor, Li Wenliang. He got infected and he died. All this within probably 70 days or so. And it was this silencing that delayed further the Chinese the Red Chinese government's recognition of what was happening, and then and only when they recognized, were prepared to recognize it publicly, could they begin to deal with it. Wise people are still saying not to trust much of what's coming out of Red China. They have consistently lied. We may still not know anything near the truth. Here's another report on the shopping situation, at least in Vancouver, in regards to this virus. This is from Frank. Hi everyone. I went shopping at Whole Foods this afternoon, and the shelves were completely stripped bare of certain items like rice, all types of beans, toilet paper, and immune boosting supplements. I've never seen anything like this before. Fortunately, he's been stocking up on immune boosters for the last several weeks. Zinc, vitamin C, elderberry, garlic concentrate, and oregano leaf oil. Things like dry beans will store for a long time and can be readily cooked. They're relatively inexpensive and they're good, but this demonstrates the panic that I've been talking about, and I suggest a panic is not the right way to go about things. Somewhere between whistling through the graveyard, ho hum, and nothing to worry about, and blind panic, I think there's a middle road, and it's a middle road that I strongly urge my listeners, whether you're in the United States or Canada or abroad, to follow. Prudent preparations. Yes, some extra toilet paper. Things that are easily stored and easily cooked, like rice. Concentrated tomatoes or tomato sauce. Pasta, if you eat that. And if you've got a reliable freezer, you might want to freeze some meat. Some ground beef or chicken. Now, knowing, of course, that most food will deteriorate, you can keep frozen food for some weeks. Dry food like rice and beans for a considerable period of time. Canned food for several years. I would suggest prudent precautions. Be particularly mindful of shut-ins or disabled people or elderly people who may have trouble shopping or have trouble preparing. So some of the people I'm involved with here in British Columbia are doing that. We're helping each other out, telling people where things can be bought and offering where people may have some limitations in terms of their transportation to help them out. Would you like me to buy you a bag of rice, or would you like me to buy you a couple of cans of stewed tomatoes, or something like that? And I would be suggesting a quarantine period of 14. You need 2 weeks' supply of food. I think that would be a reasonable precaution. So that if you are quarantined, or heaven forbid, if there's a further run on the grocery stores, that you'll be prepared. And unless the transportation network breaks down, I can see these shortages being only on an occasional basis. The stores have every motivation to want to stock those shelves, especially if people are buying. So that on the basis of people I've spoken to on this, would be the best advice. Take precautions. Lay in a reasonable store of food, but don't go overboard. And just financially, it's not very smart to, especially buying food that you might not use. That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Going to take my musical break right now. And here's some songs by Kris Kristofferson, a great songwriter and singer. Lyle Lovett and Emmy Lou Harris. And these are songs that were at the Johnny Cash tribute, at the great tribute to a man who was a troubled
Shaw Blucher TV. Stop searching, start watching.
You mean start binging.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kris Kristofferson.
Johnny Cash and Bill Clinton, as it should be. Woke up Sunday morning, no way to hold my head that didn't hurt. And I washed my face, combed my hair, stumbled down the stairs to meet the day. Then I crossed the empty street, caught the Sunday smell of someone frying chicken. And it took me back to something I'd lost somehow, somewhere along the way. On the Sunday morning sidewalk, wishing, Lord, that I was stoned.
play something on Sunday. Made to buy me feel alone.
There ain't nothing short of dying. Half as lonesome as the sound.
On the sleeping city sidewalk. Sunday morning.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lyle Lovett.
Mr. Cash, thank you for writing so many great songs for us.
I hear the train come, it's a rolling round. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in this prison, and time keeps dragging. That train keeps rolling on down to San Antonio. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. And when I hear that whistle blow,
ladies and gentlemen, Emmy Lou Harris.
I love you, John. And you know love is a burning thing. And it makes a fiery ring. Brought up a Baptist, and yet he has the soul of a mystic. He's lived a hard life, a tough life, and yet he has a sensitivity to beauty and elegance and children that is beyond compare. The tie that binds all of these things together is Johnny Cash, the songwriter. And as a songwriter, he is profoundly original. This is the song that defines him more than any other, his signature song, and the song that he's sung every concert for the last 40 years. I'm going to do this for you, Dad. I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. Open all the time. I keep the ends out for the time that binds because you're mine. I want the light.
Calls the love that I can't hide. For you I know I'm
with your family, and you can relax now. We're going to sing it to you.
A gifted singer, guitarist, and songwriter, please welcome John Carter Cash. Gracious thanks. Gracious thanks. Thank you. My father is the kind of man who makes everyone he gets close to feel like family. And I've always thought Willie Nelson to be a part of that extended family. He and my father are truly kindred spirits. They've always been rebels, but never without a good cause. As artists and as men, they've maintained their uniqueness and naturally ignored the trends. They've held true to their beliefs, musically and spiritually. Performing I Still Miss Someone, please welcome back Willie Nelson.
Thank you very much. Before we start the song, I want to say one thing. Thank you, John Carter. Appreciate it very much. I'm very happy to be here doing a tribute, being a part of the tribute to my good friend, Johnny Cash. Thank you all for coming out and helping all of us tell John how glad we are to see him. Glad to see you back in the audience and on the stage, John. That's where you need to be, and get that bus warmed up, because the highwaymen are ready to do it again, if you are. In the meantime, I'm going to do one of my favorite Johnny Cash songs.
Is descended from country royalty. The Carter family was present at the very birth of country music. In her music and her writing, she has continued to honor that great legacy. And as Johnny's wife for more than 30 years, through the good times and the hard times, June has always made sure that the family circle would be unbroken. It is a privilege to introduce the great June Carter Cash to sing the classic song she co-wrote, Ring of Fire.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is a big night for me. I'm so used to hearing Johnny Cash sing Ring of Fire that I never get to sing it. This song had to do about when I first fell in love with Johnny Cash. And it was kind of a scary thing, because this was in the early years. And he was kind of scary at that time. But
I had a wonderful life with him, and I've got six wonderful daughters and my son, and this is a great night for us all. And so just let me sing this with true love in my heart for the man I love tonight, and for my daughters, Carlene and Rosie, and the rest of the daughters, Kathy, Cindy, and Tara, and Roseanne, they're all here. So it's for all of you.
Great tribute to Johnny Cash. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're here on AltRightTV.com. This is, of course, the Maple Leaf Forever.